The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Drug addiction continues to be a problem in this country and other parts of the world. The amazing fact is that you may not know that you're living with an addiction problem and that the drugs in question may be in your own home. This is Afflicted by Addiction with your host, Bradley DeHaven. Brad has been on the front lines of addiction and will share the wisdom he's discovered along with guest experts and those who have lived through it or are living through it right now. Here's your host, Bradley DeHaven.
Welcome to Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven. We're here every Tuesday at noon, and you can listen to our shows through the archive if you visit rxdrugaddict.com and click on the link that says Afflicted by Addiction. You can really listen to any show that we've done in the past, and you may find that some of the shows that we've interviewed with recovering addicts or admitted drug dealers or professionals like doctors or politicians or parents and activists who become the accidental advocates and the accidental, you know, face of addiction just by the fact that their children have been stricken or afflicted by addiction. And we're joined today by Kelly Densmore. And Kelly is with a group called Mothers with a Purpose out of kind of the Bay Area of California, in that area. And Kelly, I met by speaking to her group, which I've spoken to her group twice. I've never spoken to any group twice. I usually speak once and move on, but in Kelly's case, I've spoken to them and also worked with a couple of Naranon groups in that area. So welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So we're going to get started here and kind of ask you the question that I ask all parents when we go into this interview. Title of my show is Afflicted by Addiction. So I'm going to ask you, are you, Kelly, afflicted by addiction?
Yes, we are. Our whole family is affected by addiction. Yes.
Yeah, and that's just it. Tell us, it does affect your whole family. A lot of people think addiction happens to the addict, but it's quite the opposite. Don't you agree?
I do agree. It totally affects the whole family. It can totally take over a family and divide it in many, many ways.
So addiction divides us when our child is becoming addicted, because sometimes husbands and wives or ex-husbands and ex-wives or whatever the family dynamics happen to be, step-parents and all those fun things that go on in any world. But the addict really has a way of finding the weak side of the belly on somebody and exploiting that. Tell us if that happened to you.
It did. I can just kind of start my story by saying that about 4 years ago, we received it was kind of a double-edged sword. It was the worst call I ever got, but it was probably the best call we ever got, stating that my son was doing drugs and was on the road of destruction, and we needed to do something immediately. So we immediately hung the phone up and made a plane reservation and went to his location where he was attending college, and that's when the journey began. At least it began for us. I think the journey began for my son many, many years prior and us not knowing it.
You know, a lot of people, and I know you deal with a lot of people with your group, Mothers with a Purpose, but a lot of people say to me, I can't put my kid in rehab. I can't help them right now. They just got a new job and I don't want to run that, or they're attending college and I will wait until after they're done. What would you say to that?
Well, I would say I was like that at first, too. I remember when we took him from college and started our first rehab, and I honestly thought this was just something we could put a Band-Aid on and move on. I really never really understood what addiction was until it hit me smack in the face. But I remember thinking, okay, we're going to get him through his second year of college. We're going to, you know, we're going to stay down there with him. He's going to get through. And I mean, that lasted for probably a day of thinking that way. And then when I realized how severe my son was and his using of different types of drugs, I realized that, and we realized that he definitely needed to start his rehab process. And college could wait. College could wait for a year down the road, 3 years down the road, you know, whatever it takes. I mean, we're talking about your, you know, a life.
Exactly.
And addiction can totally destroy that life, and it can take your life. So we got over that real fast. And when parents come to me and ask me, you know, or say to me, we got to get them through, you know, they're in college, and I just say, you know what, college can wait. College will be there. College isn't going to go anywhere.
I think that that's really important, and it is a difficult pill to swallow at first. As you mentioned, you have the same experience, and so mm-hmm. did we. You think you can put a Band-Aid on this, and unfortunately, it's this fire-breathing dragon that we really don't know how bad the addiction is until we dig in and start treatment. Don't you agree?
I totally agree. I had no idea. I remember the first rehab that we went to, I remember the director of the rehab facility said that he was doing a lot more than we knew about. And I just kind of looked at him like a deer in headlights and not really understanding. But then as a week went into it, it hit me really hard, and then I really got it. And so I knew, and so did his dad, that we totally made the right decision by ripping him out of college and starting the process.
And so when you made the comment earlier about you know, it was a good thing, it was a bad thing. I think you said the best and the worst, you know, day or call. I mean, looking back, I think a lot of us parents who are afflicted by addiction and have either lost our addict or live with our addict on a daily basis, we see those days and those times, whether they be the time that we first found out or when they first went off to rehab. At the time, they were real lows, or when they relapse, just an unbelievable low for me personally.
Right.
But when I look back, I see these as that step backwards so that we could hopefully leap forward. Do you?
Correct. Yes. You know, the parent that made the phone call to us, I can't even imagine how she felt by making that phone call. I mean, that is a huge thing to do, is to call a parent up and say, your child's in trouble, you need to help him. Because a lot of people are in denial. Not my child, whatever. But that's a huge, huge step for a parent. And my hat goes off to anybody that can do that. And so I can't say enough how much she probably saved his life.
Well, I totally agree with you. It is very difficult, and so many parents will look the other way. And unfortunately, a lot of parents won't make that call because they know the resistance they're going to be met with when they get mom or dad on the phone. They know that they're going to be met with the not my child. I mean, we know that personally because mm-hmm. we deal with these people all the time. But I will tell you that there had to be a lot of people, and there were a lot of people that knew that my son was using and were afraid to tell us, or my son would, you know, circumvent their effort by some grandiose. At one point, I remember finding out after my son's addiction that one lady had caught him using drugs, and he convinced this lady, a mother of a friend of his, that I beat him regularly, and that if she told me that I would beat him. And it wasn't till after his addiction, and I'd known her for many years. I'd coached her kid in soccer and baseball, and but she just wouldn't contact me because she was, you know, she believed him. And addicts are professional liars by necessity, so they do anything they can to keep that cat in the bag.
Correct. The addicts are professional liars and professional manipulators.
They absolutely are. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's difficult. And even without that story, if you will, a lot of parents won't make that call. I've made that call to no avail to a couple of my very good friends, knowing that their kids were using or seeing the symptoms or showing up at their house and seeing their pinpoint pupils and saying, you know, your kid's high, or your daughter's water bottle, why don't you give it a sniff? I just, you know, it's full of vodka. Why are her and her friend putting four water bottles in their backpacks before they walk out the door? And the seal's been cracked on all of them.
Right.
Little things that, you know, and then these parents would say, well, you know, why would you say that? I mean, my daughter's a good, you know, I'm not saying it because your kid's bad, which kind of brings us back to your son. He becomes an addict, and a lot of people see addicts as bad people.
No.
Did your son grow up as a bad person? Was he a troubled child? Was he always a pain in the rear? What was he like growing up?
He was the sweetest, the kindest little boy. It makes me want to cry because he was so sweet, and he just made a wrong decision at the wrong time, and it totally drove him into that, you know, he's got the addictive gene in him, and so it took him over. So, you know, he grew up in a family. His dad and I have been divorced since he's been about a three. However, we have always worked together for our, you know, I have two boys from my previous marriage, and my son, who has the addiction problem, is from that marriage. And we always have worked together very closely to make our boys never feel divided. So if we would go to basketball games, soccer games, if we go to baseball, we would all sit together. I have remarried. I have two children from my current marriage, and I've worked really hard to make everybody a one united family. And his dad has always been a part of all that. My husband now totally embraces all that and is very, very supportive of the whole, mixed family, if you want to say that. I mean, my ex-husband is now with someone who just adopted a little baby, and we've all come together and are one big, happy family. And we've done that for my boys. To make them feel like, you know, there's never been a division there and stuff. So he did not come from, you know, yes, he came from a divorced family, but he didn't come from a broken family, if that makes sense, if I'm saying that correctly.
It absolutely makes sense. And even, I mean, there's plenty of people that don't divorce that unfortunately probably should. There's a lot of tension in some households. And what I find, and I'm sure that you find with your group Mothers with a Purpose, is that that isn't really a factor, whether there was a divorce or a marriage or someone. In our case, my wife and I next year will celebrate our 30th wedding anniversary. So we still have an addict in our home. I still, like I mentioned, coached their baseball and their soccer and their football and did all those things that you think the good father is supposed to do. But it doesn't change that one bad choice, as you referred to. If you think about it, people can swallow the pill that their kid took, no pun intended, but their kid took one bad choice in a car and wrecked it and maybe broke both their legs or even hurt themselves more severely, that they were messing around in the car and they made a bad choice. But that same bad choice with a prescription pill can certainly change the outcome of someone's life, as we've seen.
Correct. I don't even know if... it definitely is a prescription pill, but, you know, I believe the way I understand it is that it started with the pot and some drinking, and then it moved into ecstasy, Xanax, and Oxycontin into heroin. So, you know, it's the same story, just a different name.
Exactly. It's a very familiar journey. Wherever they get on this train, whether they get on at alcohol at 13 or the stop that is pot at 14 or whatever it is, it seems to kind of end up at the same destination.
Correct. You might have just taken different detours, but you do definitely end up at the same destination.
Yeah. And so it's difficult. You know, when you found out, when he was in college and you found out that he was using, how old was he?
He was not quite 20 years old.
Okay, so not quite 20 years old. Did you later find out when his journey of experimenting with drugs had begun? What age?
You know, I don't know exactly. I can kind of pinpoint it. I think it was probably about 13 years old. It kind of started with the smoking of the pot, and I believe that might have started in middle school. I could be off a year here or there.
Sure.
And then it just escalated. And I have to tell you, I mean, I had no idea. I mean, I thought, you know, he might have smoked pot here and there. But never in my wildest dreams did I ever think it was to the point that it was. And my son, what looks like the all-American boy, he was an honor student. He lettered in academics, for God's sake. He went to a great school, college. He did great on his SATs. He worked the system, man. He knew how to get by. He would be the kid that could not go to class and get the syllabus and then do the papers and then take the test and get, and you would never know that he never went to class.
So how's a parent supposed to know that their kid's abusing drugs with the signs that you just shared with
us? Well, correct. So my point is that he just worked it, and that's kind of why Mothers with a Purpose got started, is because we're trying to show the signs to parents and have them understand what these signs were, because if I knew the signs of using, I would have caught it a lot earlier.
And it's signs that you mentioned, though, that parents will look past those obvious signs, because you and I both know, along with every other advocate and person that has a loved one who's an addict, that those signs and symptoms are very obvious now, aren't they, when
Correct.
You look back?
Correct.
But you and I both also know that we were more likely to look at academic overachiever, lettering in sports, or whatever the case may be, lead cheerleader, most popular girl in school, whatever the son or daughter happens to be going through, we as parents kind of naturally gravitate towards that positive and say, the rest of this can't be bad because this is what they're doing in their grades, or this is what they're doing in their sports, or they're super, good looking and popular and all these kind of things. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day, does it?
No, I mean, this disease hits everybody. It doesn't discriminate. It doesn't discriminate against anyone. It can hit the football player, the basketball player. It can hit the debate team, the band member, a cheerleader. We have functioning addicts in our lives every day. We have, professionals that are functioning addicts. I mean, this hits everyone. You don't have to live in the dark alleys or behind a house that's pitch black to be an addict. My son came from a very, very comfortable lifestyle, and it hit him smack in the face.
Actually, that is absolutely 100% true, and that's what far too many parents are finding out. When we come back from the break, I'd like to talk more about Mothers with a Purpose and what you folks are doing to reach out and how it all began and how you began with Mothers with a Purpose. We're joined today by Kelly Dinsmore with Mothers with a Purpose. She's telling us her story. I'm Bradley DeHaven. You're listening to Afflicted by Addiction, and we'll be right back.
Bradley DeHaven has spoken to thousands of parents and addicts, discovering commonalities and teachable moments that can spare you the consequences of addiction. The signs, symptoms, and solutions of drug addiction is something you can learn now, or when you are forced to. Bradley has written two books on drug addiction from the view of a parent. His no BS approach could save your child's life. Brad has been interviewed on Fox, ABC, CBS, The Huffington Post, and other forms of media. Brad and his son appear in the award-winning documentary Behind the Orange Curtain. Brad's available as a keynote speaker for events and corporations. Learning about addiction is important for every family. All the rules have changed, and now the drugs that addict our children are synthetic heroin, prescribed by your doctor and found in your own medicine cabinet. Sign up for Brad's newsletter on rxdrugaddict.com and find links to his two books, Defining Moments and The Addict Among Us. Again, be sure to visit rxdrugaddict.com for more information.
Prescription drug and heroin use are epidemic in America. Every 19 minutes, someone dies from a drug overdose. Every 24 minutes, someone dies from a prescription drug overdose. Where do these drugs come from? Your own medicine cabinet, the middle school playground, friends, and the biggest problem of all, dirty doctors. Behind the Orange Curtain is a hard-hitting documentary that will open your eyes and your heart to this very real epidemic facing our youth today. Prescription drugs and heroin use. Addiction crosses all socio and economic barriers. It doesn't matter if you live on Park Avenue or the park bench. No one is exempt. It's in your city, your county, your state, and in your backyard. Behind the Orange Curtain is coming to iTunes April 23rd. Check out Behind the Orange Curtain on Facebook and visit our website, at www.behindtheorangecurtain.net.
There are lots of ways to have a killer party. Taking prescription drugs like hydrocodone, oxycodone, or Lortab shouldn't be one of them. Because while you may think that prescription drugs are safer than street drugs, the fact is they're not. Prescription painkillers like these are opiates, just like heroin. They have the same effect on the human brain as heroin, and they are just as addictive as heroin. That means it won't take long before those pills get a hold of you, and once you're hooked, your life will never be the same. So think twice before you take someone else's prescription meds at a party. And don't bring your prescriptions or your parents to share with others. Because a killer party is great, but a party that ultimately kills a promising future, that's another thing altogether. For more information on the dangers of prescription drug abuse, visit painkillerskill.org today.
Michael was the light of my life. At the age of 12, Michael got Crohn's disease. Doctors started prescribing him hydrocodone. On June 4th of 2011, Michael shot himself. Not a day goes by I don't miss my son. Not a night goes by that I don't dream of him.
Painkillers are just as addictive as street drugs like heroin, and they can kill more than just pain. Know the dangers. Visit painkillerskill.org. Let's say your child is having a dental or surgical procedure. They're given painkillers like hydrocodone, oxycodone, or Lortab. And since a doctor prescribed them, they're okay, right? Wrong. Prescription painkillers are just as addictive as street drugs like heroin. And it doesn't take long for even good kids to get hooked. So know the dangers, because prescription painkillers are killing more than just pain. Visit painkillerskill.org today.
Hi, I'm Bradley DeHaven, and I'm the host of Afflicted by Addiction. The best rehab is the one that works for you. And this show has been made possible by the generous contribution of the rehab center that my son went to, Narcanon. I'm blessed that my son is 2.5 years clean of the drugs that once owned him. Narcanon gave him the tools that he needed to walk through a world filled with drugs and not return to the darkness of addiction. Narcanon did not want to run a commercial during this program, but I want to thank them for allowing the voice of those of you who are afflicted by addiction to be heard. Visit my website, rxdrugaddict.com, to get a link to Narcanon. And if you want to learn more, just click on the site. Again, the best rehab is the one that works for you. Most importantly, seek professional help if you are afflicted by addiction.
You are tuned in to Afflicted by Addiction with your host, Bradley DeHaven. If you have a question or comment for Brad about the program, please send an email to brad@rxdrugaddict.com. That's brad@rxdrugaddict.com. Now back to our program, Afflicted by Addiction.
Welcome back to Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven, and we're talking today with Kelly Densmore, and Kelly Densmore joins us from Mothers with a Purpose in the Bay Area of California, and is telling us her story about her son's addiction and how we're just working up to where we talk a little bit more about Mothers with a Purpose, and that's what I'd like to do here. Kelly, welcome back.
Thank you, Bradley.
Okay, so real quick, just housekeeping items. You can join us at, or you can visit me at rxdrugaddict.com. You can listen to any archived show from there. We have a newsletter and a lot of different, you know, services on there that you can link on to, and you can also get a hold of me personally and look at the two books that I've written and so on and so forth. So, Kelly, tell me, how much after finding out your son's addiction, and by the way, you mentioned his first rehab, how many rehabs did your son go through?
My son went through 4 rehabs.
Okay, so this is something that, you know, I heard you kind of hummy, you know, when I said when my son relapsed, it was real devastating. So you've obviously felt relapse before, correct?
Yes, many, many times, yes.
Yeah. So with four rehabs, a lot of parents are under this false impression, as you might have been, I know as I was, when my son went through his first rehab, it was kind of like he was fixed. I felt like we were good. In fact, my son went 18 months before he relapsed, so I really felt like we were getting somewhere. I was floored when he relapsed. What about you?
My son was in his first rehab was a 28-day program, which just makes me laugh now at 28 days, but I think that's why insurance will only pay 28 days. But he, the way I understand it, he left his first rehab, and he probably relapsed probably a couple weeks after his first rehab. And not knowing it, because, you know, as an addict, they can manipulate and lie, and they're pretty professional about the whole thing. And then we probably found out a month later that he had relapsed, and then it just started spiraling down, and to the point that he was, you know, not coming home. We couldn't find him, and finally he reached out and wanted to come home, and I said no, and I said, unless you go into rehab. So we entered our second rehab. And, you know, the process just kept going. And then we went to our third rehab, and he was clean for probably, oh, I want to say 7 months, and then he relapsed. And that's when I said enough. It was destroying the whole family. I couldn't stand back and see my other three children be destroyed along with my, you know, myself, my husband, his dad. And so I just said enough. And, you know, I knew that I could love him, but I couldn't love him to death, and he had to want this. And he walked himself into detox one day and said, Mom, I'm ready. I surrender. And he became clean. He went into his fourth rehab, and I am so happy to say today he is over 2 years clean.
That's awesome, and that's a part of the story that many people wait to hear. I know that you've heard me speak before, and I think it's always so refreshing. You know, when I do, you know, say that, no, my son is at 3 years clean right now, it's always a round of applause from people, because a lot of those people are dreaming when they can make that statement.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and it's correct, and you know, this is a disease of the brain, and this disease can take over at any time. It's like cancer. It can come back at any time, or diabetes. You know, it's just something you will have the rest of your life that you have to deal with and live with, and know how to work and keep yourself in sobriety. And so hopefully, you know, that's where we are today. He's working in a rehab facility himself, helping other young men around his age stay clean. And I really believe that's his calling. He loves his job, and I really believe that really helps him stay in sobriety.
Well, I think it does too. And in fact, in my first book, one of the kind of shout outs I did and acknowledgments was to those people that make that sacrifice to work with others at rehab centers, because they live a pretty meek lifestyle. And these are some academic overachievers that we parents once thought, oh, this guy's going to be the CEO of blah, blah, blah. But then we come to realize that it really does, as long as they're the CEO of themselves and they're happy and they're clean. And we dodge such a bullet with that we really change our expectations, don't we?
Correct. Absolutely. Yes. Yes, absolutely. You know, my son is very, very bright. He could do anything he wants, but he wants to give back, and he wants to help others, and he is now back in school, and he is going towards a degree of psychology so he can help others.
You know, one of the fears that we addicts have, and it's interesting, my son, who gives back to this community and was just filmed for another documentary, he's been in one already with me, and speaks to people and mentors young people at the gym and shows them how to work out. He posted just Tuesday of this week on his Facebook, I'm going to share this post with you and ask your opinion. He said, I share the same fear as my parents and many friends do. The day an accident takes place around me that leaves my decision to not use pills or painkillers is taken out of my hands. I recently had a friend, and this happened to him. It took many years of sobriety away from him, and he's now facing an unknown path of addiction. He had no choice in this. In our day and age, the first thing a doctor does is try to relieve the pain. But for us, it could wake up a monster that we once thought was behind us. I understand that he is in consistent pain and needs relief to get past this. His friends and family will still be worried for some time until he's back. I will extend my hand to help him along with others that care. I fear and pray And I hope his willpower takes over and he wants the life that he once built for himself. And this young man, and I know the story, was knocked unconscious and, in fact, was in a coma when he was taken to the hospital or stayed in a coma. And he was drugged rather heavily for some pretty major damage that was done to his body in an accident. And he did wake up from that accident and from that coma, but addicted again to the opiates that once owned him after many years of sobriety. And this is a fear that people live with. What about yourself?
Yes, absolutely. I'm sitting here shaking my head going, yes, yes. I mean, it is. It's a huge fear. I mean, you know, I fear every time, you know, my son needs his wisdom teeth out. I'm like, do they understand that you're in recovery? Do they understand that you have addiction problems? I mean, and he's like, yes, they understand, they understand. I mean, that's my biggest fear, you know, them giving him Vicodin or something like that. You know, it's a big fear of it's just in everyday life. I mean, it's huge. I mean, that is something that I think about all the time.
Absolutely. In fact, my son's relapse was triggered by dental work, but I will tell you that he consciously took the painkillers they gave him for having a lot of dental work done, and that's something that addicts come out of many years of usage needing a lot of dental work.
Right.
And they go in for this massive dental work, and these dentists really are like, wow, I'm going to fill 11 cavities and pull this tooth and do this and that. Just dental work alone, the knee-jerk reaction for that is to, you know, relieve that pain generally with an opiate. And it's scary. You know, it's unfortunate that, you know, if I look back and I say, oh, my son started when he broke his arm and he was given Vicodin, I would have done anything to know then what I know now. And I share this with parents, as I know you do, that we have choices as parents on what painkillers our young children are given. And I would much rather my son had suffered a little bit for a couple of weeks with the pain in his broken arm than suffered a lifetime of addiction.
Well, it's funny you say that because I have a daughter who is almost 16 years old, and she plays soccer, and she hurt her arm. And so we took her to the emergency room. It was on a Sunday afternoon and stuff. And the first thing was asked to her is, how's the pain from 1 to 10? And she said, you know, she's 16. She over-exaggerates probably. She said an 8. And I looked at her, and he goes, well, do you need me to give you some pain medication? And I said, absolutely not. And the ER doctor looked at me and he goes, okay, obviously there's something I don't know. I said, yes, there is something you don't know. We have addiction that runs through our family. I said, I have a son who's in sobriety at this point. And I said, and we will not have painkillers. Her arm, we will give her some Advil or some Motrin, but there will be no painkillers.
Right.
And he's like, okay. So I really like snapped immediately because my biggest fear after having two small children is that gene is in our family. And I do not, you know, you hear a lot of times how parents have 1, 2, 3 different kids that are addicted. And I'm doing everything in my power to educate my girls, to have them understand what this is all about. I've never hidden anything from them, so they understand everything. And just so they know that, you know, this could happen to them.
Well, we both know, though, just like me, you wouldn't have snapped had this been the first child that ever
Correct.
Broke their arm for the first time.
Correct.
So that's what we're trying to share with people out there, and I'm the same way. But I have two boys. They both broke their arm at around 13, 14, and it must have been for me beating them or something. But now one in football and one on a trampoline. But here, one became addicted, and the other one didn't even like the feeling of the pills and gave them back to us. But I always encourage parents to dole out those pain medications, dole out those anxiety meds or Ritalin or Adderall or any med that your kid is on should be doled out as it's prescribed or needed. And pain pills are something that a lot of people need to understand are for acute, instant pain, and then you're done. They're not like take one every 4 hours. Like you might a blood pressure medication or take it on a regular basis. It just doesn't make a lot of sense that so many prescriptions are dished out like that.
I agree. I totally agree with that.
So let's talk a little bit about when was it or how long after your son's initial, you know, at what level of which rehab did Mothers with a Purpose come up, or did you start Mothers with a Purpose?
Well, so I went into our first rehab and you know, it was, you know, you're never going to rehab. You know, you're pretty much, a deer in headlights. Went through a lot of family sessions, and at one point was told that I probably needed to go to the Betty Ford Clinic myself. And that's not where he was, but I should probably go down there because they probably could help me because I needed help myself. And that just made me so angry. And I said to myself, oh, we'll see about that. I'm going to show you. So we got out of our first rehab and went to an AA meeting and ran into a child that I've known for a very, very long time, and was totally shocked, and then reached out to his mom that I've known for a very long time, and it took her some time to get back to me because she was dealing with her own sadness and the addiction, and she finally reached out to me. We got together, and we would sit for hours and hours and hours and talk about, you know, what was going on and things like that. During the time that I was in rehab, the first rehab, I came across a parent that told me to read a book called The Lost Years. And it's by a woman named Christina Wonsalak that who has been in recovery, I believe, for 19 years. And in the book, it tells her version of addiction, and it tells her mother's side of addiction and how it affected the family. And from that book, I said to the other co-founder of Mothers with a Purpose, I said, we need to start a group. We need to start a group. And she said, okay, let's do it. So we started out in a family room of a couple moms, and it grew and it grew. And then we started making ourselves known. Unfortunately, we lost a child to addiction, and he passed away, and there was an article written about the child and that we orchestrated to put into a local newspaper, and the school board got a hold of it, and they offered us a room at the school, and since then, we meet the second and fourth Thursday of every month.
And how many members do you have?
It can range. It can range from a meeting can range from anywhere from 15 to, I've seen it, 50. How many people have we touched? Probably over 1,000.
And that's the important part of these grassroots efforts that that are community based, that get those people out of their living rooms or out of their dark back rooms where they're sitting there reeling in their own personal pain. Unfortunately, lets them know that they're not alone, but at the same time, fortunately, lets them know that they're not alone. Do you agree?
You know, correct. And I wanted people also to know that I'm not ashamed that my son's has a disease of addiction. My son is a great kid. He's got a lot to offer this world. We are a very nice family, or families, I should say. And I wanted people to know that, and I wanted people to understand what I've lived, and I want them to learn so they can maybe take some shortcuts through the journey of addiction and know that they're not alone. I think that's the biggest thing to me, is to know you're not alone, and know that somebody's there to put their arms around you, or just to take a phone call late at night when they're on the other end crying their eyes out.
It really is, and it's also important to help people understand things like, what is the difference between a 28-day rehab that your insurance covers and one that you might have to reach deep into your pocket for? And when we come back from the break, I'd like to talk more about that, because I think that's an important part. And I'll share with you what I typically tell somebody if they say my insurance covers a 28-day, and what my advice to them is. And I'd be interested in what your advice would be as well. So when we come back from the break, we'll go into that. I'm Bradley DeHaven. You're listening to Afflicted by Addiction, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Bradley DeHaven, and I'm the host of Afflicted by Addiction. The best rehab is the one that works for you. And this show has been made possible by the generous contribution of the rehab center that my son went to, Narcanon. I'm blessed that my son is 2.5 years clean of the drugs that once owned him. Narcanon gave him the tools that he needed to walk through a world filled with drugs and not return to the darkness of addiction. Narcanon did not want to run a commercial during this program, but I want to thank them for allowing the voice of those of you who are afflicted by addiction to be heard. Visit my website, rxdrugaddict.com, to get a link to Narcanon. And if you want to learn more, just click on the site. Again, the best rehab is the one that works for you. Most importantly, seek professional help if you are afflicted by addiction.
Let's say your child is having a dental or surgical procedure. They're given painkillers like hydrocodone, oxycodone, or Lortab. And since a doctor prescribed them, they're okay, right? Wrong. Prescription painkillers are just as addictive as street drugs like heroin. And it doesn't take long for even good kids to get hooked. So know the dangers, because prescription painkillers are killing more than just pain. Visit painkillerskill.org today.
Michael was the light of my life. At the age of 12, Michael got Crohn's disease. Doctors started prescribing him hydrocodone. On June 4th of 2011, Michael shot himself. Not a day goes by I don't miss my son. Not a night goes by that I don't dream of him.
Painkillers are just as addictive as street drugs like heroin, and they can kill more than just pain. Know the dangers. Visit painkillerskill.org.
Bradley DeHaven has spoken to thousands of parents and addicts, discovering commonalities and teachable moments that can spare you the consequences of addiction. The signs, symptoms, and solutions of drug addiction is something you can learn now, or when you are forced to. Bradley has written two books on drug addiction from the view of a parent. His no BS approach could save your child's life. Brad has been interviewed on Fox, ABC, CBS, The Huffington Post, and other forms of media. Brad and his son appear in the award-winning documentary Behind the Orange Curtain. Brad's available as a keynote speaker for events and corporations. Learning about addiction is important for every family. All the rules have changed, and now the drugs that addict our children are synthetic heroin, prescribed by your doctor and found in your own medicine cabinet. Sign up for Brad's newsletter on rxdrugaddict.com and find links to his two books, Defining Moments and The Addict Among Us. Again, be sure to visit rxdrugaddict.com for more information.
Party. Taking prescription drugs like hydrocodone, oxycodone, or Lortab shouldn't be one of them. Because while you may think that prescription drugs are safer than street drugs, the fact is they're not. Prescription painkillers like these are opiates. Just like heroin, they have the same effect on the human brain as heroin, and they are just as addictive as heroin. That means it won't take long before those pills get a hold of you, and once you're hooked, your life will never be the same. So think twice before you take someone else's prescription meds at a party. And don't bring your prescriptions or your parents to share with others, because a killer party is great. But a party that ultimately kills a promising future, that's another thing altogether. For more information on the dangers of prescription drug abuse, visit painkillerskill.org today.
Prescription drug and heroin use are epidemic in America. Every 19 minutes, someone dies from a drug overdose. Every 24 minutes, someone dies from a prescription drug overdose. Where do these drugs come from? Your own medicine cabinet, the middle school playground, friends, and the biggest problem of all, dirty doctors. Behind the Orange Curtain is a hard-hitting documentary that will open your eyes and your heart to this very real epidemic facing our youth today. Prescription drugs and heroin use. Addiction crosses all socio and economic barriers. It doesn't matter if you live on Park Avenue or the park bench. No one is exempt. It's in your city, your county, your state, and in your backyard. Behind the Orange Curtain is coming to iTunes April 23rd. Check out Behind the Orange Curtain on Facebook and visit our website at www.behindtheorangecurtain.net.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to Afflicted by Addiction with your host, Bradley DeHaven. If you have a question or comment for Brad about the program, please send an email to brad@rxdrugaddict.com. That's Brad at rxdrugaddict.com. Now back to our program, Afflicted by Addiction.
Welcome back to Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven, and we're here every Tuesday at noon. My website is rxdrugaddict.com, and as a special little bonus to you, I've written two books on addiction, Defining Moments, A Suburban Father's Journey into a Son's Addiction, and The Addict Among Us, which is a self-help book based on about 400 interviews I did of families afflicted by addiction. But on my first book, if you go to the name of the show, afflictedbyaddiction.com, there's a secret website on there that you can download the first book digitally for free. It's my gift to you, and I'm happy to share it. We're joined today by Kelly Dinsmore. Kelly joins us from the Bay Area of California with the group Mothers with a Purpose. Welcome back, Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you, Bradley. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Well, Kelly and I have met in person, and I've spoken at her group and met a lot of the families associated with the group. And we were talking before the break about how this becomes a family. It was interesting when you were telling me about the child that you lost, you said, "We lost a child," almost as if it was your own. But here, this is your family, Mothers with a Purpose, and that group lost a child. We lost a child. I think that that's important for people to understand that this is a community, and you build these grassroots organizations, and you become a family, don't you?
Yes, you absolutely do. My dearest friends have come from this group of Mothers with a Purpose.
I agree with you. In my advocacy for a better world and on this prescription drug epidemic, I have met people that I will consider my lifelong friends. And I've shared things with these people, as I know you have with your group, that you don't normally share with your friends and sometimes even with your own family.
Correct.
It becomes very intimate, and because this is something that is, like you said, you're not ashamed of this, and you need to let those people know that you're not ashamed of it, because a lot of people, do they join your group with that level of shame?
You know, it's funny. Sometimes they do. It takes. There's a parent that it took this parent 5 months to call Mothers with a Purpose. And finally, when they did call, they walked through the door for the first time. They couldn't believe it took them so long to call, but they were so scared. Because when you make that phone call or you walk through the door, you are admitting to yourself that there's a problem. And some people have a hard time with that. And what I try to do is talk to them on the phone or other people in the group talk to these new parents on the phone so they know that they're not alone. And then I'll meet them at the door and we'll go in together and I'll sit next to them and, you know, and rub their back or make sure that they just know that they're okay, because once that they know that they're not alone, then things start to change and they start to have hope.
You know, I tell people all the time, and I think that you'll agree, that when they're feeling alone and they're not in a group, to find a local group and it's not, unfortunately, not hard to find a local group typically, but to understand that when you go there to that group, that you don't have to say anything, that you can walk in that room and listen to other people, and you'll see people that are up there talking so freely, and you'll see people that can barely eke out their first word without crying. And usually the people that can barely say their first word are probably there for the first time or the second time or pretty new members. But it's important that people understand that they can go to these groups and not be judged and sit down and say nothing if that's what they want to do and work their way into their comfort zone where they can say something. Do you see that happening as well?
Yes, I do. I do see that happening as well. And I always make sure that once that we're done with the group that we contact the new parent and make sure that they're doing okay and meet them for coffee or just knowing that I give them my phone number so they can call in. And I have to say 9 times out of 10, they do reach out again, and then the relationship starts to grow, and then they start to grow as a person who's trying to get recovery for themselves.
They absolutely do, and they start to see that community that we talked about just a few minutes ago. So I alluded to before the break the 28-day treatment, and personally, when someone tells me, oh, the only thing I can do is a 28-day treatment because that's what my insurance covers, if that's the only thing they're maybe even willing to do to start with, I always tell people that that might be a good place to get your addicted loved one in there to start with, but during that 28 days, I would sure start doing your homework, because it is very difficult to do your homework to find the rehab that best fits you overnight. And a lot of times we're faced with something overnight. So, you know, throwing a 28-day net on your addicted loved one is sometimes not a bad thing. It's just that my personal experience and all the people I've interviewed, it's 1% of people that tell me that one trip to a 28 or 30-day or 25-day, you know, month-long basically program rarely does the job. Agreed?
I totally agree. I wish somebody would have told me the longer the better. If you can possibly afford or figure out how to do that, I think that 28 days it makes me crazy, because you are talking about a lifetime addiction. It's a disease that you live with forever, and how can 28 days cure that? I don't understand that. I don't know how the insurance companies think that it can. I don't think there's enough emphasis in this country about the disease of addiction. I think that our government needs to be more involved in that and understand it. And I wish that they would put more education into that. I remember, and I think you were with me when we went to Sacramento and we sat on the Senate floor and we spoke to, on the floor there.
Yeah.
And I hit on the area of education and educating these parents in the schools and stuff and finding the means for that. I think that's really, really important. If I knew that a longer program was probably better the first time around, I think that's the road we would have gone down. But we didn't know that.
Well, I honestly think these month-long or less programs are outrageous, in my opinion. It's outrageous to me that our insurance company will pay for a 90-day supply of the pills that addicted our kids, but only a 30-day supply of the treatment to get them off.
Not 30, 28 days.
Yeah. Some depending on the states, anywhere from 25 to 30 days. Yeah. California, 28. And it depends on where they're at, but one way or the next, under a month, ain't going to do it.
Yeah.
Typically, it's very rare that it works, but it is something, and it is a form of treatment. And I always tell people, rather than try to treat addiction at home, seek out professional help. But I really think that is just a waiting room, the short-term programs, rather than actual treatment. And I think a bigger plan needs to happen. But so many parents, and you know this as well as me, they get done with that 28-day program, and they're like, whew, glad that's over with. Now we can get on with sending him back to school or sending her back to college or whatever the scenario happens to be, because we crossed that T and we dotted that I of that 28-day program, and now we're good to go.
Well, I totally agree with that. And, you know, when we went into our first 28-day program, the 27th day we had a meeting with, you know, the counselors, the director, my son's father and I. And I remember them saying to me, what would you like to see happen? And I said, honestly? And they said, yes. And I said, to put him in a closet, lock the door, and throw away the key. And they looked at me and they said, that's unrealistic. And I go, really? Because I was so scared of what was going to happen when he left.
Right.
Because he wasn't in the cocoon of safety. He had to go out and face the real world. He was going back to the triggers that he knew and all the surroundings that he used in before he left for college. So I was totally out of my mind, just crazy. And now looking back on that, I don't even know how I lived through that. But, you know, you just go as it comes, and that's what was exactly going on in our case. So I can tell you that the first thing I say to parents, if you can go longer than 28 days, if you can go 3 months, if you can go 6 months, if you can go 9 months, 12, a year, shoot for it. Because if your child had cancer or something that, you know, would take their life, you would fight for it. For some reason, people think that addiction is a dirty word, and it is not a dirty word.
Addiction
hits almost, I'm not going to say every family, but it hits a huge percentage of families in this world that people don't even know about.
you know, it hits so many families, and it is so very individual. The way people react, the addiction itself, the effect on family members. Some get completely mowed over, some not so much, but usually it is pretty devastating to every level. In the case of my son and his brother, and so many of the siblings that I talked about, they were devastated. They felt like their sibling was going to die. They knew about the addiction more than their parents. They knew about it from friends. They just lived in fear that the phone was going to ring that one day, and it was going to be that your brother or sister is dead or has overdosed. And that kind of trauma on a young child or a sibling, whether even an older sibling, is devastating.
You know, Bradley, I used to go to bed every night when my son was, you know, in rehab, coming out of rehab, out there using, and I would go to bed every night and I would pray, God, please don't let this phone ring tonight. Please don't let this phone ring tonight and tell me he's dead. And I would wake up every morning and ask for the courage just to keep going and get through the day. And I would start that process over every night and every morning. And I have to tell you, just saying that to you right now makes me crazy, because it took such a toll on our family. It took a toll on him. And I mean, it's heart-wrenching, and it's such a strong disease. And the more education that parents can have on this disease and understanding the signs to look for, the better off they're going to be, because I'm still learning. I know you're still learning.
Absolutely.
And every day I learn something different. And so, I mean, you just constantly have to keep educating yourself, because every day there's something new that's coming out that's the rage, or, you know, something, a different type of pill and how they're doing it. And, I mean, you just have to, in order to survive, you have to.
Right. And there's a lot of parents that you talk to and they say, oh, it's not that bad. We're going to fix it. You know, it's, I don't think they're using that much. And sometimes I'll say to them, let me ask you a couple questions. If the phone were to ring at 2 a.m. in the morning before you picked it up, what would the thought that would be in your head? And almost all of them say that my son is dead or on the streets or arrested or, you know, overdosed or whatever. And on the same note, I ask them, when you hear a siren, what do you think about? Do you think it's for you? You think it's your child? And they do. And so pointing out to them that those very signs and things that we suffered through as parents, and kind of giving them the, stating the obvious, if you will, that these are the things that we went through knowing we had an addict. And if these people are telling me it's not that bad, and they're feeling the same way when they hear a siren or when the phone rings or when someone does ding-dong ditch in the middle of the night, I remember how angry I used to get when that used to happen, because it used to scare me so bad, because I thought it was something to do with my son.
Right.
And you'd go out there and nobody would be there. And that whole walk to the front door of just knowing that this was going to be a police chaplain, you know, it just, it's punishing, as you mentioned. So, you know, there's a lot that we parents can do to keep this, to hopefully keep addiction at bay and to be smarter about it. And it can roll all the way back to our choice of what drugs our kids get, our choice of doling these drugs out to our kids if they're prescribed them, and just monitoring this stuff a little bit more and finding out those signs and symptoms that aren't the happy signs and symptoms that you want to think of instead.
Correct. Correct.
So Mothers with a Purpose, it's a nonprofit, correct?
It is a nonprofit. Yes, it is.
Tell me about that.
We became a nonprofit approximately maybe a year and a half to 2 years ago, and we are now taking that status, and we're trying to grow it, and we're trying to help families that are in need of scholarship funds, and educating the public, putting on drug forums, and possibly we're working right now on possibly getting a disposable bin put at a local police station for people to drop off unused drugs.
Right. And all of these are important steps in reform at some level that we've discovered. So let me ask you, what would you say to parents? If you could help parents or loved ones, what would you tell them right now? What would you share with them if you had your most important message to pick?
I would say you as a parent needs to start your recovery, and you need to start support. And however you choose to do that, by going to Al-Anon, to Nar-Anon, to any grassroots, you know, organization like ourselves, you need to start that, because until you change, the person that's got the addiction will not change. So when you start to change, they're going to start to change. And I think that's the biggest thing. You have to start recovery because, like I said in the beginning of this interview, that this is truly a family disease.
Absolutely. And things have to change in recovery, even after recovery and you bring them home. That environment needs to change as well.
Correct.
And that's an important thing, an important step that many of us miss, because especially if we ship our kids off to under a month treatment program and they come back, there's not a lot of training for us as parents, loved ones, and family members so that we can change that environment and better support their sobriety. And we learn that the hard way. We're joined today by Kelly Densmore, Mothers with a Purpose, out of the Bay Area. What's your website, Kelly?
www.motherswithapurpose.org.
Thank you so much, Kelly, for joining me today. You're listening to Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven, and we'll be back next week. Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Please join Bradley DeHaven for another Afflicted by Addiction program on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll be back next Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time. We'll talk more then.